this is also not a completely new target, but it is a target that was done in the past, and then it had to be stopped for a few reasons. One of them was around the issue of labor. It also, it was also in 2020, we had to stop it because of COVID and the hazards that were highlighted associated with implementing the biometric enrollment. And the sixth one is the monitoring of the transfer for SMD, and specifically this time around we highlighted four issues that we felt these issues, the impact on service delivery, and we say if the staff does not deliver on these things, they will hamper service delivery, and we will have to at least do something around those, around issues of payment. And the last one deals with the issue of open cash pay funds check that we need to reduce by 50%. And as we speak now, we have about 700 of those open cash pay funds, because we should hear this one check that there's a difference with in terms of the active cash pay funds with about 1.5. And within that, we've got the 700 that are open. And this is aligned to the Minister's Performance Agreement as well, to say we need to deal with the open ones. And as we deal with them, we're not closing them down, but we are relocating them to, we're moving them to places, community halls, and the ports, so that we make sure that there's dignity as we serve our clients. And then the next slide, perfect. And these two slides, also as part of saving time, I would request Chief that instead of going through the two, let's go straight into the details on slide number 70 to deal exactly with this, the target, all the four of them, and linking them into the correct priority of government and the outcome of SASMA. So the first one, Chair, in front of us, slide number 17, deals with outcome number one, which is reducing levels of poverty. And as far as that, there's about few things that we've highlighted for this financial year. One, we are saying, Chair, we need to continue with the payment of the 18.5 plus social grant on a monthly basis. The second thing, Chair, is the take-up rate, which we are targeting 1.2 million approved grants, at least 1.2. We know even last year we got more than 1.3 million, but we are, the target is 1.2. And then the third one, Chair, we are talking about the projection in terms of the growth of the social grants impact. And we are saying by end of March, considering all what is happening, the unemployment that the country is going through, and other elements, it looks, and the projections are pointing that it will grow to 18.9 million by end of March 2023. And then the last one is the one we spoke to you about as a new target, which is the implementation of the extended CSG top-up, and the target for financial year one, which is 2022-2023, is 191,200 grants in payment by end of March. The next slide. This slide, Chair, highlights the growth of the social grants in the past 5 years. You can notice that from 2017 to 2021, December, the growth, and it's so interesting, Chair, to see that the last 2 years where we're battling with COVID, and we expected the number of, one will expect that the numbers will have grown exponentially. However, the numbers actually they are lower than the other 3 years. But this slide is to the Chair and the members they have. And then this slide, Chair, deals with the issue of exclusion, particularly for children under the age of one. And for the financial year 2022-23, the Chairperson, as far as we are saying, at least 65% of eligible children within this cohort should be in the seat of children's fund. Again, it is a target that is aligned to the Minister's Performance Agreement. It is aligned to the MPSF for 2024. Next slide, the question. Within the workforce that we deal with the normal grants that we have dealt with, and we have shown you given the growth for the past 5 years. There's also the element of the social relief, which is the CFO has spoken COVID-19 special plan. I know the naming the naming convention has happened, but we will deal with that as we do our reporting to Parliament and the committees, and that is to deal with the processing from a certain point of view, processing of the applications at the 100% rate. And then the second part is the one that deals with the normal SRD. And the normal SRD has been affected by the developments within the SRD space. And within the SRD space, there's been developments that are happening, and the public has been consulted, and we've been reviewing those inputs by the public as well, because that affects us delivering on the normal awards of food parcels, the uniform, and therefore that has compelled us to change how we target the normal class. Instead of targeting those awards, we are now going to target our response time to disasters, which is at least 95% of supported disaster care need to be responded to within 48 hours. And also the second element of the normal SRD will be to assist those that are waiting approval of their social funds. Next one. And the second outcome change is the one that deals with our contribution to economic transformation. And we have the CEO has spoken to it, that it focuses mainly on the SMEs and cooperatives. And we are saying this time around, when there's a change in how we've targeted the chairperson, because previously we were targeting the 400 million that was given to SAFA for the normal SMEs. But this time around, because of the changes that are happening within the SAFA space, we are going to focus it now broadly to the goods and services budget of SAFA and make sure that we report on all the transactions that will have happened through SMEs and corporations. So the scope is made bigger than the 400 million in the past. The next one is a question. Then the third outcome change, which is now about improving customer experience. Within improving customer experience, we have introduced one new target, but the others are still continuous. Like your first and second, which is us dealing with the inquiries, resolving the inquiries of our customers within 10 days and resolving our disputes within 14 days. And we see that there's a difference between the turnaround time. The other one is 10 and around 14, because it's 14 because there is dependency on other external partners, including Masapo. Therefore, it should allow for that extra 4 days. And then the third one is the customer satisfaction survey to determine the client satisfaction index. And toward the end of the year, we will also, once we've completed the survey, we'll also then develop a service delivery improvement plan that will assist us to deal with the issues or the gaps that have been identified in the past 20 years. And then lastly, we deal with issues of communication, and we are saying for this year we want to implement the integrated communication strategy so that we also improve customer communication, we improve organizational reputation, and we deal with issues of strategic nature as we communicate. And then the second slide on the same outcome chain, it deals with around the payment area, of which the first one deals with the payment of the social plan, and we are targeting at least 99%. We know we need to pay 100%, but the 99%, it just safeguards us, because there are things that are beyond SAFA's control. For an example, during the verification, when certain accounts have been closed, you cannot process the payment, and therefore just that one to cover those issues that are beyond our control. And then the second one goes with the monitoring of the social bank payments across all payment platforms, which is your bank, which is your support, the merchants, and all over, and looking at the terms and be able to see where our clients are picking up their benefits. And the last one, we spoke to it as well, which is the monitoring of the SLA support and elevating certain specific things that are critical in our service delivery. which is the provision of the basic service, the additional of payment, starting time for payment, as well as the infrastructure within the software environment, which deals with the outlets in the pay cons and all of that. And then the last outcome chain deals with the improving our organizational ambitions. And you will see that this one is more internal looking. It actually wants to have a stronger SASA, empowered SASA, so that we are able to deliver. And the first few things that we elevate here is around turnaround times for us processing the application. The first one deals with the face-to-face applications, and we are saying we are moving from the 10 days to 5 days. And in our strategy check, we want to gradually arrive at the 1 day. And we are looking at doing that by the end of the 2024-2025 period of the strategy. And then the second one is the one that deals with online application, which we are saying we want to make sure that they're completed within 10 days. And then within the same outcome chain, the CEO has touched on this issue to say our process has been manual. We want to make sure that when they are automated, we want to invest on systems, and these are part of the things that we want to do, of the system interfaces to deal with the validation of beneficiaries with the other institutions of government, the migration from legacy systems to ERP web-based systems, the biometric identification technology solution that we have spoken to you to say it was stopped for issues related to COVID and the hazards that we identified. And lastly, the issue of the queue management in the 18 local offices. Next slide, Super Passion. And again, within the same outcome, we highlight the first target or output as the unqualified audit for SASA, which is critical. The second one is about the social assistance debt that we need to recover and or submit for write-off to both DSD and the National Treasury. And the third and fourth one are looking at the cost of administering the social assistance project, both from an admin, which is the SASA budget point of view, as well as the cost of administering the social tax. The next one. And within the same outcome of organizational efficiency, we have spoken to these two, and we have included them as new targets in the list, and they deal with the capacity of SASA and also with the organizational structure that is linked to the project business process re-engineering. The next slide, reference. And towards SASA improving the conditions under which our beneficiaries are served, Jefferson, we have highlighted these two important things. One is about the accommodation improvement practice that we are developing, and it will be implemented to focus on these four areas that we've spoken to earlier as a target. And then the second one is the one that deals with reducing open cash pay points. And again, we are emphasizing here, we are not completely getting rid of them, but we are relocating them. They will still exist, but at better conditions where they should exist. Next slide. Well, within the same outcome chain, there's issues of consequence management that deals with issues of labor relations. We deal with the financial misconduct cases chain, both the cases that are new and the cases that we've carried over from the previous financial years, as well as the issues around alleged fraud and corruption cases that are reported through the different channels, and we have a target of 80% of those that need to be finalized. And lastly, we also, as part of the fraud detection chain, we also need to deal with those issues that arise as suspected fraud and report those to the relevant stakeholders for corrective action. Then the last one, Superpasses, is the one that deals with the issue of the BPR and the work within the BPR that we need to do the PPR as we speak now, Chair, we have completed the as-is processes and that report has been accepted by Better Management, and the next level is the issue of the to-be processes that need to be met, and we are targeting that the new financial year, and we obviously, as we report to Parliament and other stakeholders in a quarterly basis, progress will be made to those the stakeholders. And thank you very much, Chair. The next slide, we will then ask the CFO to take the committee through the MTF file. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, and Honourable Deputy Minister. I will be able to take committee through the MTF allocation. My name is Bagheri Watsauke. Here, this slide, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, is just depicting that we did not receive any additional allocation for the year 2022-23, and what type of approach has been in allocating the resources just to cover the operational requirements as presented by the CEO and Mr. Zwane. We had to look in terms of reprioritization, looking at the spending of certain programs and prioritizing critical programs that we did, which included largely to look at all the targets that we are committing for the year 2022-23 to make sure that they are adequately funded. But furthermore, we also noted that going forward, we will not have any budget reduction as presented during the MTEC process. Next slide, please. This slide, Chair, it does indicate the allocation from 2019-20 so that the Honourable Members can see how the allocation has been. I think of note, you will note that in 2021-22, that we had an additional 500 million that was allocated specifically for the special COVID grant administration, which in the year that we are presenting the APP for, which is the year 2022-23, we did not get any allocation relating to the special grant related to the special COVID. If one was to compare the allocation for 2021-22 and the year 2022-23, we'll only see that the increase is about 35 million, which is quite insignificant, given that we needed to make sure that they didn't contact with the CTI, and we also had to really consider the COE, with Composition of Employee Allocation. But if you were to look at the year, the outer years 2023-24 and 2024-25, you will see that if this stays the same in 2024-25, we may have a significant increase of about almost just under 400 million, which would have been significant. But in 2023-24, we will only have about 70 million allocation. Next slide, please. There's 7.5 billion that we have been allocated, which you can see under 2023. It's broken down. You'll see that 61% goes to Program 2, which is the core business of SASA, which has to deal with the social assistance benefits. So, and only administration only takes about 39% of the allocation of the 7.5 billion. Next slide, please. Just if we were to look at the economic classification, you will see that 54% of the budget goes to goods and services, and 45% goes to composition of employees, payment of staff. You will know that the model to service beneficiaries currently is more of the contact at local offices. So therefore, it explains why you will have 45% of the allocation goes going to staffing, because the model in which we are dealing with largely has to rely on direct contact and interface with our communities. Only 1% will go to just the transfers in this regard. Next slide. When one has to go and look at how the SASA budget goes in terms of the budget. terms of the COP, you will see that significantly, you will see that SASA, although we have about 7,500 employees that we have, the bulk of those employees are at level 5, which is at the cost base of our service delivery, and you will see that the larger cost of COE will go into level 5, and at this depicts in terms of the numbers that we have in terms of the level that support the operation within SASA. Next slide, please. This slide, just to lift certain things that coming from the year 2023 would be affected by some of these in terms of the operation. We did the report when we're reporting in terms of the year 2020-21 that we currently have a contingent liability, which is a dispute that further has with organized labor about the upgrade of levels, that there are level 9 that need to be paid at level 10 and level 11 needs to be paid at level 12. This is before the court as part of the conciliation between SASA and the organized labor. Currently, when we depicted it at the end of March 2021, we're looking at this being about 230 million if ever to lose this matter. But this is a contingent liability which will be financed primarily by the prioritization of the vacant post and also the savings if ever were to lose it during the year 2022-23 together with any labor related claims of about 14 million. But we also have a material tender process that we're going, which has to do with the records management center, which is the registry where we keep the beneficiary records. Currently, if we were to award this tender, it requires 130 million, which is the one-off cost, which is currently will be financed from the retained surplus, as we currently discussing with National Treasury. It has been funded in the previous year, but the tender could not be completed because there were non-responsive. All tenders were non-responsive, so we have to restart this process, and it will be awarded during the course of the 22-23. So it has a significant cost of 130 million, which is a one-off. Just to move the registry, it's about 60 million of records that need to be moved out of the current registry if a different service provider was to be awarded this tender. The next two slides, which is the one that is on the screen and the following slide, Honorable Chair, it just indicates the breakdown in terms of the figures, which is for commentary and just to support the presentation and to make sure that we say we have broken the budget and we have allocated the key operational requirements of the agency. The last slide, we're just recommending that the Select Committee on Social Services consider the support of the 2022-23 annual government plan and the MTS budget allocation. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for giving us the opportunity to present before the committee.
Thank you very much, Chair. We'll be guided by the Chair in terms of the process that we will use for us to respond to the question. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, CEO. First, let me greet the Minister, the Department members and the staff because is the chairperson who started chairing the meeting earlier on, so I didn't greet them. I want to make the apology for the chairperson, but she's still on the platform. She's not feeling well, so she requested me to continue with the meeting. And I want to thank the minister, the acting DG, and the CEO for the presentation with their team. Now I want to hand over to the, I want to allow the members if there are any questions or comments on the presentation that has been made by the department. I want to check in the platform. I've seen only the hand for Honorable Luthuli, Honorable Ndongeni. Yeah, there are two hands on the platform. Before I give to Honorable Luthuli and Honorable Ndongeni, let me raise my question. Or there is also the hand for Honorable Christian. That's the only three hands that I've seen now. I think maybe there are other members who will come after. But for now, I will start then give over to Luthuli and Honorable Ndongeni, then Christian. I want to check in the issue of the NDA. In the previous financial year, the NDA board expressed concern with the level of irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The focus continues with a KPI to reduce the non-compliance in irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure by 80% in 2022-2023 financial year, and ultimately eliminate it in the 2024-2025 financial year. What measures will the NDA take to ensure there is no irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the current financial year? And also, I want to, because there is that issue that the NDA envisions to raise the 35 million for CSOs by the end of the 2022-2023 financial year. And if the department can give us more information or provide us with information, how are they going to raise the 35 million by the end of the 2022 and 2023 financial year? Thank you. I will hand over to Honorable Luthuli. After Honorable Luthuli, Honorable Ndongeni.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson and Christine, to everyone. You have covered me with the irregular expenditure, Acting Chair. But my questions are on NDA. How is the NDA planning to achieve its target that is set out in Program 2 with a huge budget cut for 2021-2022 financial year? Also on NDA, I would also want to know that I have noticed that some of the risks associated with non-cooperation by stakeholders. My question is, how is the department planning to mitigate the risk of non-cooperation? And then with SASA, I understand that SASA has increased its relief grant for cases and flood victims from 721,980 for those who have lost all their belongings. What measures are in place for SASA to oversee the spending of the budget and also to ensure that the funds are not stolen? Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Suri and Reverend Ndongeni.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Morning, members. Morning, Minister. Officials. My question in SASA. That's what I want to add on Luthuli about the increase in the relief grant for KZN flood victims from 700 to 1.984 disaster cases, only four belongings have been lost. But the Eastern Cape and Northern Cape have been included in that because there's a victims in flood victims in Eastern Cape and even in Northwest. Sorry about the Northern Cape, in what Northwest. The second one, one of SASA outcomes is to have effective and efficient social grant payment services. How will SASA manage this in the event of load shedding, given its automation and review of business processes? The third one, there are no infrastructure projects planning for 2022-2023 financial year. Due to the budgetary constraints, does the agency plan to engage the national treasurer on this for additional funding? Furthermore, would the budget cut affect SASA's targets in relation to social assistance? The last one for the SASA, if SASA can explain to us about this specific grant, this application, I don't know whether you applied every month or you applied once and you have this facility, or every month you're supposed to apply and answer those questions. If they can explain on that, I can be glad. Let me go to MTA. On MTA, I have what has been covered. On MTA, I have one question. If they can name, they have a pilot project, and then it can be at the provinces. We're going to start those pilot projects, the provinces, the name of provinces and municipalities for the purpose of oversight. Secondly, the criteria they use to choose these provinces and the municipalities, I'm not quite sure. Maybe they have been explained, but unfortunately I have a problem of the network. So they can help me on that. Thanks, that person. Hello?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, I'm partly covered with the questions with regard to the budget cuts with the NDA. Obviously, the reduced budgets or the budget cuts are a huge concern. And my question to the department then is whether they will reach their targets within the time frame that they've indicated. And further to that, the irregular expenditure that has been obviously highlighted in the NDA for quite a number of years now, I would like to know that, and obviously the Auditor General has also been warning DSD together with NDA. Now, what consequence management plans does the department have in place to rectify this? I see there that they say that they want to reduce it by 80%. Is this feasible? And what specific measures will they take or put in place to see to it that they actually reach those targets? And then with regard to SASSA, I just have one concern there. The application form, members of the community have been asking about the application form where the applicant is supposed to indicate the parent or spouse, who the parent or spouse is, together with a identity number. Now, my concern there is that we have many people who do not have parents. We have many people that come out of the foster care system or who are orphans, who obviously do not know their parents, much less their ID numbers. And obviously, some of our applicants are not married, so they do not have ID numbers. And apparently, the system does then not want to accept the application without those details. So I understand the department's need for checks and balances and to authenticate applications, which is obviously very important, but I would like to know whether this is indeed true and if indeed there are other mechanisms then in place to assist the people who do not have that particular details at hand. And then just lastly, Chairperson, because we are the National Council of Provinces and we deal specifically with provincial issues, I have an issue in the Northern Cape province that I have tried to raise provincially and nationally, and to date I have not received a reply. In fact, it has been a long-standing issue for more than a year. The SASSA offices in Barkly West in the Northern Cape are situated in an area where, in fact, it's situated in an area where middle and upper class people live who do not need the SASSA grant. Now, for the people who do need it to actually access that, they need to walk very far and they need to walk through very dangerous bushes and areas. And the request has been that they move that SASSA office back to town. The SASSA office was previously in town. It was moved to this area. We don't know for what reason. I've requested an answer from the national department, I've requested an answer from the provincial department. To date, I have not received any answer. It is in a dangerous area, and the people of Barkly West have requested that I raise this very important matter on this platform to see to it that that office is moved back to the town area of Barkly West. And I was wondering if the department, the national department, could assist me on that matter. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think there is another question for Honorable Lihihi. Can you come in, Honorable Lihihi?
Can I address you? When you start establishing a central digital service that can better be linked to Department of Labor, which will automatically remove the beneficiary if they fall off the criteria. How true is it that if I see 30% on 350 unemployment relief fund, FAFA has called for resubmission of applications. Many people did not receive their payments even though they applied. No communication was received from FAFA. Okay. The 350 was not ideal.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Hihi. I think it's the last question. I've seen the hand of Honorable Lutuli. You want to come back on the previous hand? Maybe she forgot to lower her hand. I think I will hand over to, I think the minister will do the closing remarks. I will hand over to the CEO and the acting DG to respond from the questions. I don't know who's going to start.
Yes. Yeah. No, we'll start, MDA. We'll start. Sorry. Thank you, Honorable Members and Chair. We had a number of questions that are related. One is related to a irregular expenditure, and we have also a number of questions that are related in terms of our mobilization of funds to meet the targets. And you have got a question that relates to the non-cooperation of stakeholders. And Mr. Brooker will deal with that. And the pilot size, the Ma'am Kumalo, who is our chief operation, will deal with that question. And the budget cuts. I'll deal with the budget cuts, and the CFO can come also and add. And I'll deal with the irregular expenditure questions, because they are all related. Look, NDA at the beginning of this financial year was sitting with 175 million irregular expenditure. And this irregular expenditure ran between 2014-15 to 2021-22. And it has been a huge number, and the reason was at no point that we as an agency had a very clear plan on how to reduce how to comply with irregular expenditure framework of the national treasury. And at
attempts were made in 1920 to start dealing with removing some of the irregular expenditure. And every time we submitted at that point, 2019-2020 financial year, we got a response of non-approval by the National Treasury. And the reason were in twofold. One, some of the irregular expenditure that were requested for condemnation by National Treasury were actually a responsibility of the board to condone. And the ones that would have gone to National Treasury, there were additional information that they required, which most of it related to consequence management. And we hadn't thrown a process for complying with the irregular expenditure framework. So in last year, 21-22, the first thing we did was to draw that process. What do you do in terms of, one, making a submission to the appropriate authority for irregular expenditure condonation? And what are the requirements that you must have for that appropriate authority, whether it's National Treasury or the board, you need to put in place for that authority to grant condonation. So in December, last December, we got a response from National Treasury on the areas that makes them difficulty for them to grant us condonation. So in January, we put all those documents that are required and the process for compliance in terms of a condonation of irregular expenditure. And in February, we submitted a request for condonation for 98.2 million. And in March, we were given that condonation. So currently, out of that 175 million, this year we had a condonation of 98 million. And that condonation relates to irregular expenditure that happened between 2014 and 2019. And most of those irregular expenditure were related to contracts for offices around the national office and the 9 provincial offices that we had, which were procured without following the competitive bidding process. And the reason that that happened during that period, our supply chain management unit was, one, under-resourced, two, we had not separated the functions and duties for the officers that are in that unit, because each one of them has got a specific function that they must follow. And in previous years, the procurement was done at different points, at different levels, different units, ended up in most of those procurements not following the competitive bidding or contravening some parts of the supply chain. And most of the people that actually caused those non-compliance It left the NDA, either because their contract ended or they left employment to get another job somewhere. Only one person in that group was dismissed, the senior supply chain officer. But for now, we had removed the 98 million. Currently, we have appointed a loss control committee because that's a requirement. We never had one. And they're sitting with about 11 contracts that are irregular, that they are doing determination tests. First thing that you have to do is to do those determination tests. And the determination tests gives you three things. One, who is the person that, or people in the staff that have caused that irregularity. Two, it then confirms the amounts. What is the amount of each of those contracts? And thirdly, it then requires you, the determination test will then recommend, which is binding, that recommendation is binding, for consequence management on the staff that have caused that particular irregularity and irregular expenditure. Two, if there is a loss and they suffered, you then recover that debt from those particular individuals. Three, if they suspect any criminality, then you have to go and report it to the police, any nearest police station, and you get a case number. They are in the process of giving us those three things, which will then act in this coming financial year. And given that process, we are confident that consequence management will follow for the staff that are still with the NDA employee. When loss has been suffered by the NDA, we have set up a process for recovery of that money. And for those that would have left the employment of the NDA, there's a process for recovering money from those people, including using debt collectors and state lawyers to recover that money. So the kind of targets that you have set are doable, and for the past 2 years now, we've seen a decline, a significant decline in irregular and wasteful and fruitless expenditure, and we have met the process. So we feel quite comfortable that NDA, if we apply the process to the T based on the framework, we'll be able to remove or even prevent, because part of the process deals with prevention, that it must never happen. It must be picked up before any transaction takes place. And we have increased the staff in SCM, but trained and attended several training programs on SCM. And we feel quite comfortable that we have got a well-functioning supply chain unit. In terms of the anything that relates to budget cuts and meeting targets with such huge cuts. Remember, NDA has been having a budget cut since 2009 to present. At that point, the cut was over 40%. And in 2009-2010, and we are still recovering from that because our base became so low that to increase it to the original trajectory, it has been a very, very hard process. But there are two things that we have put in place. One, the Act requires NDA to fund its program from what it terms conduit funding. This is funding that comes from all government departments, that comes from all foreign government aid, and that comes from the private sector. Over the years, we have never built capacity in that area. And this year, we have set up that unit, which is led by Mr. Brookway, whom we recruited last year, to set up that function. The Section 3.2 of the Act is very specific, that the allocation that comes from National Treasury to the NDA via DSD is for administration and good governance of the institution. And it then says, but NDA may use some of that money to fund projects. Otherwise, 3.1 states all funding for CSOs at NDA must come from the conjugate funds that comes from the different stakeholders that I've said. So, partly as we speak now, the turnaround strategy is forcing NDA to raise $1 billion a year for funding of CSOs at impactful level. We've put that mechanism. That's why this year is a bridging year to build that, and it's quite possible to raise that money from all those sources. There is no reason why we can't actually raise that money given building capacities within the NDA, one, to focus on projects that have got impact, huge projects, three, projects that create jobs, and four, projects that the products can be put in the market with quality and competitiveness. And all of those pipelines are the pipelines that we're building within the turnaround strategy. within the turnaround strategy. If we are able to put all those systems together, NDA has got the potential of being the premier development agency of the country. And it is likely to even produce over 1 million jobs a year. There's no question around that. But we have to reconfigure the NDA. It must never look as the NDA that we are used to. So for us, we are quite comfortable that one, based on the model that we will be adopting in the next 2 months, and we will present the turnaround strategy to this committee once we have just tied the loose ends in the next 2 months, so that you can have a view of the type of NDA that will be operating in the future. The question of targets, the targets that we have set up in the current financial year are all achievable, including the reduction of the irregular expenditure and the raising of funds. We currently sit with funds that we have just got only from a government, a departments and projects. It was in excess of 45 million just as we start the year. So it's quite possible that we will be able to raise any targets. If we come next year, probably our targets for fundraising will be close to 1 billion. And we believe we can raise that. And the question that relates to non-cooperative or stakeholders, I'm not sure whether Mr. Brooker, are you in? If he's not in, I'll talk about it. But I know the COO can talk about the pilot sites in the provinces and the criteria that we are using to select those pilot sites. The COO and Mr. Brooker. Ms. Kumalo.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning, Chairperson and members and the Honorable Minister. First and foremost, the pilot exercise will be conducted in all 9 provinces. But then when it comes to the district municipalities, we will be targeting those municipalities in which the DDM was launched by the President. But you are aware that the President did not launch the DDM in all 9 provinces. In some provinces, there was no launch which took place. So what we have done is that we have conducted a needs analysis exercise where now we have looked at the poverty or development indicators within those particular districts. But then after we have done that, what we are planning to do is that through our volunteer program, we will conduct a community profiling exercise where now within those communities which we are targeting, we will gather fresh and recent data on the needs of the community and also engage in an engagement exercise with all relevant stakeholders within those communities. So as a direct response, one would mention that we will be piloting these interventions in the 9 provinces, first and foremost targeting those districts in which the DDM was launched by the President. In the district where the DDM was not launched, we will conduct a needs assessment exercise and also make sure that we gather fresh and recent data so that our interventions target the needs of the communities. Thanks, CEO and Chairperson.
Mr. Brooker, if you are around, if he is not, let me just quickly talk about the stakeholders. Mr. Brooker is busy going all through 9 provinces. In the Eastern Cape, we had put together 6 to 7 companies that are operating there, that we have presented our strategy for supporting districts and creating jobs. Our focus is job creation and economic participation and opening the markets for product that comes from the organizations that we are supporting, either in agriculture, in garment making, in bricklaying, and all those kinds of skills that are abundant in the community and people can easily get economic activities that can provide sustainable income. They've already met and they've already started making commitments on funding projects within the Eastern Cape. He is going to KZN and has been to Limpopo. And all of them are promising. So raising the 35 million, we don't think that will be an issue. And two, we had never had physical contact with the private sector and present them with sustainable projects that they themselves can talk about investment in terms of increasing employment levels, more especially in poor communities. They've been lacking platforms which they can use to invest on those platforms to build the ability of the population in this country, more especially the youth and women, in terms of making sure that the one day is employment, sustainable employment jobs, and two, the sustainable businesses that can produce products that are required by local communities and that are required by business, for including export. So in that way, and if we massify that kind of approach, we're definitely sure that there is skills, there's latent skills across all communities in this country that can assist in reducing unemployment that is related to all of this economic hardship that is had globally. So Mr. Brooker is making sure that we create a platform to engage with all of the stakeholders. Thank you, Chair.
Mayor, thank you. I think I can hand over to the CEO.
Thank you very much, Chair. I was getting concerned about the issue of time. I will try to respond to most of the questions and will hand over to Brenton to answer maybe one or two questions, and then we'll ask the acting REM in Northern Cape to respond to the Barclay issue and explain as to where are we in terms of the move of the office there. The first question by Member Luthuli was, how will we achieve our objectives with the budget cuts? The biggest challenge we have is us being able to address all the issues that are related to 350. As the CFO said earlier on, we didn't get an operational budget for 350 in this round. We did not utilize the funding that we got last year, but we didn't get any funding this round. It therefore means that we'll have to take it from cost of employees, not unless a national treasury comes back and give us an allocation in the next round. So we'll see. We'll do the best that we can. And Member Ndongeni asked a question about whether the increase of the grant, particularly in terms of the social relief, if the increase is only in KZN. No, ma'am. The no members, member Ndongeni. It's not only in KZN. We've increased the SRD across with the money that we have. As we all know, as we still have the budget, we can allocate the funding. But when we run off the budget, then it therefore means that there is nothing we can do. We still are doing okay. We've allocated 85 million to KZN, and they are still okay in terms of tracking because there's a lot of other people that are provide support. So we provide support where support is not actually provided. The other question was on what the impact of load shedding is going to be on us making sure that we're effective and efficient in terms of the processes that we utilize. We haven't tracked on the impact of load shedding per se, but we know that in terms of efficiencies, as we improve and use more and more automated processes, maybe it could impact in that regard. But for now, most of the processes that we utilize, other than the processes for 350, are manual. Therefore, the impact is more on the system's downtime. But we haven't tracked it. We'll track as to what the impact is going to be. The question, the other question from Member Ndongeni was whether social assistance budget has been impacted. The social assistance budget has not been impacted on, except for the SRD 350. We have a limited budget of 40 billion, and that's all we can actually provide unless anything happens down the line. We don't know what the impact is going to be in terms of some of the processes that we put in place to make sure that we limit those people that don't have a need. We're not limiting the numbers for the sake of, but there are people that should not be in the system because they don't have the greatest need. So we're going to have to make sure that we improve on our processes to be able to do that. On the issue of the application that was, how often, the last question by Member Ndongeni was, how often does beneficiaries apply for 350? Beneficiaries generally apply for 350 once, but it's important to indicate that in April, all the beneficiaries that were already in the system needed to apply because the regulations were different regulations and not COVID-related. So everybody had to apply for the month of April, and those are the applications that we're going to be processing using the new application process in terms of the new regulation. But once they, in terms of going forward, beneficiaries are going to have to not apply, but indicate every 3 months as to whether they still need the grant or not, as compared to the past whereby they only applied once and they didn't have to apply again. We just need to make sure that the conditions of the beneficiaries don't change, so that as they change, we don't continue to pay people that we should not be paying. The other question that was asked was the fact that we are now requesting the applicants for them to indicate the details of the parent or the spouse. My understanding, we will check that, and I think Brenton can confirm in relation to that, is that if you don't have the information on the parent or spouse, you can skip that information and you are enabled and allowed to actually continue with the application. But I'll ask the grant team to clarify, but that's my understanding in terms of how the system is working. I'll ask Muhudi to answer first with regards to Buckley, and then Brenton will indicate with regards to the application and process. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much, CEO. I just want to respond to the issue of Buckley. Good morning, Chairperson, members, and Honourable Minister. Yes, I'm aware of the office. I know it is Buckley West. It's a sort of a, I'll say, a new building that is actually belonging to government, because previously where we were actually occupying, it was a bit closer, and then it just felt like the building was not conducive. It does not comply with all the necessary requirements, so it was too small, that it can actually accommodate our needs. So we went out to procure a suitable accommodation. Unfortunately, this one where we are now, the Bati West, because the building that is actually only available, which is of course suitable in terms of the compliance and so on, it's just a little bit away. It's correct that it is the suburb, but it's within the 10 kilometer radius. That's basically what it is, but it's not that maybe it's a permanent, what you call arrangement, because indeed we still need to have a building at the township. But at the moment when we were actually looking for this office accommodation in the township, there wasn't any public facility in the township. I think that is where the challenges are. But it is what we know, or somehow as soon as we get the office space closer to the people at the township, we will of course be able to move our patent to such a business. But for now, because this one that is where we are, is the only business that is actually available where we actually accommodated our staff, and then we agreed with the member that yes, it's quite in the suburb, but it's still within 10 kilometer radius, and then away from public library. I think it's 900 meters away from the public library. But it's something that we are actually looking at, because as soon as we get a suitable building for those people, we will of course migrate to that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. I think we've responded to most of the questions except the one of the application requirements. Brenton, can you please respond to that?
Thanks, CEO. Good afternoon. Give me a second. Okay. Thanks, Chair. Good afternoon, honourable members. The ID numbers that are required in the application bills, what CERSA is trying to do is just to get a better sense of household profiles in that. So we do ask a bit of extra information around various things such as education, previous work employment, as well as your sort of household members, whether or not if you were a youth or a younger person, we'd ask you information about your parents, or if you are older, we'd ask you information about your spouse and so forth. But all of those fields are voluntary fields. If you don't fill in that information, it doesn't stop you in any way from completing your application. We have looked at it a couple of times, and we can confirm that those fields are working as intended. So people, if they don't have that information, can skip it. What may cause a little bit of challenge is when, for example, an ID number is a numerical field, and sometimes people type 6 in, and that may give a message. But again, they can just delete that 6 and then fix, you know, just continue with the application. So the system, from our perspective, does seem to be working fine at the moment. And we've got just over 8 million applications that have come in since last week. Many of those, in fact, the vast majority of those applications not having those fields filled in. So Chair, I think we are quite confident that people are able to apply when they don't have those details. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think you are done, CEO.
Yes, ma'am, we are done. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I will now just hand over to the minister for the closing remarks. Minister, I think she's in the platform. The minister is, she's still in. I just see her in the platform, she's still in there. Minister Zulu.
Okay, if the minister...
Let me explain, ma'am. Apologies, ma'am. I've just spoken to the minister. She's trying to log back in. She was actually kicked out of the system. I think I will refer back to the chair, and the chair can decide whether we should wait for the minister or the chair can close. Thank you very much for the opportunity for us to present. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Let me appreciate for your responses as the question raised. If there are any questions or follow-up questions, the members will send through writing for their follow-up questions, if there is any. I think now, because the time is not on our side, we thank you, the minister, because she was in the meeting, I think is the connectivity on her side. Now I want to declare the meeting closed till we meet next time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I was in and then I was kicked out. Thank you, Chair. So I, that's all I can say for now. Okay, thank you, Minister. Yeah, you were in. I did tell you. Okay, thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, members and the department and the staff. The meeting is then adjourned.
The recording has stopped.